Hi, today is October 8th, 2016. This is Mold News Podcast number 178. Today, our special guests are Frank McPherson and Don Sorcinelli, who has been here before. And we only have one topic. Well, kind of subtopics, but the only topic is we're going to talk about what was announced and made by Google this past Tuesday. Yeah, I think it was this past Tuesday. But before we do, I just want to say the things that were not announced that were really disappointed me. The first thing, as John knows.
I wasn't announced.
No, well, okay, but as John knows. Oh, yeah, I didn't announce John. We're just talking about dying brain cells, too. But in any case, as Dr. Westfall well knows, I have been chomping at the bit for Google to announce the production of a new Chromebook of any kind, and generally, you know, the launch of their version of Chrome OS, which has been in beta, that allows running Android apps. They didn't talk about any of that. And more importantly, the Acer Chromebook R13, as I've been waiting for, was not officially announced as available for sale, although you can pre-order it from Amazon and a bunch of other places. But I'd like to actually order it and, you know, get a delivery in a couple of days. So that didn't happen. Also, Google did not announce any new tablet of any kind. And they didn't talk about Andromeda, which is rumored to be the merger of Chrome OS and Android. So those are the only things I was really waiting to hear about. Any one of the three would have made me happy, and I got zero. Okay.
And no surprises that they didn't announce any of those items.
You don't think you weren't surprised at all?
No. Okay, no, because I think that the Chromebook and the tablets, they'll probably announce just as a soft announcement via a blog post or something like this year. The Andromeda, I think, is so far out. That sounds like a Google I.O. type of announcement.
So next year.
So definitely wouldn't have expected to hear anything about that. But, you know, and interestingly enough, I mean, as much as this event is classified as a hardware event, I really think this was a software event.
That's a good point.
Basically Google Assistant.
Yeah, and so getting back, and that was Frank, and getting back to what they did announce, you know, my favorite article headline, it was from The Verge. I didn't write down who wrote it, but we'll put a link in the show notes. And basically, the title on The Verge is, Google announced an iPhone, a Gear VR, an Echo, and an Eero, which is a mesh Wi-Fi product. Basically, they didn't announce anything new in terms of something we don't already have. So that was pretty disappointing. So let's get to the iPhone announcement, which they call the Pixel phone. They dropped the Nexus name. They announced two sizes, a 5-inch and a 5.5-inch. The 5-inch starts at $649 for 32 gigabytes. Then it jumps to $749 for 128 gigabytes, much like the iPhone. No 256 gigabyte option. The 5.5 starts at $769 for 32 gigs and $869 for 128 gigs. So very much iPhone-like in prices. These are not the kind of price-friendly devices that the early Nexus devices were, at least. I think I paid $200 for the Nexus One when it first became available. And that was unsubsidized, unlocked, and $200. It was great. There is a no-interest financing available. There's a $99 device protection plan, and as Frank was just mentioning, it really is more of a software announcement than the phone. I think who's making this phone? HTC?
It's an HTC. Yep.
Despite the fact that they say it's made by Google, it's really made by HTC. Yeah. And really, it's more fragmentation because, as TechCrunch's article announced, Pixel's best features aren't coming to the new version of Android, which is Nougat, I guess. I guess we're not supposed to pronounce that T on the end. I say Nougat. But I don't know. What do you got? I'm not buying one, by the way. I have a Nexus 6. No. It's, you know, I'm not going to replace it.
This surprised me, and it surprised me for two reasons. Number one, I think we already sort of alluded to it, and that's the whole target market segment over the years, and now I guess they're trying to shift and portray themselves as high-end, and, you know, I guess to a certain extent the hardware is there somewhat. But that they really do. They push out special features to a new piece of hardware, and they sort of block themselves out from a pricing perspective. That was the first part. And then similar, you know, back to pricing perspective, this is a company that is trying to now woo the enterprise. And I'm telling you, the enterprise, the biggest thing they have a hard time with, and they also have a hard time with this with Apple on the iPhone too. And it's the pricing, and, you know, when you're buying in large volume. And the one thing I had kind of expected from a Pixel perspective was that, again, falling in line with what they had been doing from an enterprise perspective, this might be somewhat enterprise-friendly in pricing. Now, unless there's something going on, and I haven't heard anything about massive discounts, this puts them in the same, you know, it puts them on a par with the iPhone on all the bad things around pricing. It doesn't necessarily put them on any good footing in comparison to the iPhone, in my opinion.
And an additional negative is that for enterprises that deal, presumably in the U.S. at least, that deal with large carriers, AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, and T-Mobile, it's only available on Verizon among the big four.
Yeah. Now that I can speak a little bit to. What I will say there is that the one area where they're, and Apple's doing this too, I don't know how aware you are of this, but when it comes to enterprises, you don't necessarily have to go through the carriers. Mm. You can hook up, they're working, and the company I work for is a perfect example. From a procurement and provisioning perspective, enterprises can come through us and do, we want X number of iPhones, we want them provisioned on AT&T, fantastic. They don't have to go to AT&T in order to do that. And I will say this is something that Google had gone to as well, you know, and is making the move with that. And there are a number of system integrators and implementation partners. My company, Tango, is one of them that now do this. So that, I think that is more on the consumer side to me than the enterprise.
Good point,
Don. That if you want it, if you want it from to deal with, whether or not you do or don't, is a different story. But whether or not you want to get it through your preferred carrier, there's where the limitation is on the consumer side.
Okay.
And I was kind of surprised by the exclusivity. Once again, it's almost as though Google's going and stepping backward.
Yeah.
So to speak, you know, back to the days of carrier exclusives. And I just don't get it. There's a lot that was done with this launch that just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Go ahead, Frank.
Well, there's one piece of information that we don't have yet about their deal with Verizon that may make this a little more palatable. And that has to do with how much of Verizon's software ends up on this device. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, how fast updates I get pushed out to devices. If Google was able to get a similar type of relationship established for Verizon as Apple has, of being able to directly update the devices, even if they're sold by Verizon, then, you know, that's, you know, if that's what they had to do in order to, you know, have an exclusivity period to get Verizon to agree to that, then I think in the end that's a win for consumers, right? It's really a question of what did Verizon give. I mean, obviously, you can understand from Verizon's standpoint why they want exclusivity, right? They want to have a device that they can market like the Droid was when they marketed the heck out of the Droid.
Right.
And that might even be a factor in Google's thought process, is that experience. So you can see their perspective. So it really comes down to what's Google's benefit? What is their benefit from that relationship beyond just, you know, maybe the marketing? Is there going to be something that's of value for Google in Google users?
Okay, so I just checked. I just did a Google search while you were speaking. And according to The Verge, The Verge headline says, Verizon will control Android updates for Google Pixel phones to sell. So there you go. But Google will deliver monthly security patches. So it's more secure than your average Google phone, so, you know, sold by the carrier, but you got to wait forever and a day for, you know, whatever fellows new got.
Well, let's be clear. If you've had a Nexus phone through the carrier, and yeah, they did exist. I still have sitting here a Nexus 5 that was a T-Mobile Nexus 5.
Mm-hmm.
I did get my security updates. Back to the point of what's the advantage that Verizon possibly provides. I'd be surprised if any, especially a T-Mobile, who had been a partner for so long in offering Nexus devices, I would be surprised if suddenly T-Mobile turned around and said, oh, no, we're sorry, we're not going to allow you to put out timely patches. I don't see that as being the potential advantage. I'm holding on to see if there's something that didn't necessarily work to the consumer's advantage, but worked to Google's advantage in
conjunction. Well, and then the only thing left then is the marketing, right? And there's I've already seen Verizon commercials for the Pixel.
Yeah.
They have much bigger marketing than any of the other companies out there. And that might be just what it's all about at the end of the day.
That I agree with. That I could see.
Right.
I could see
and
that.
And as
being
soon as
the
they
case,
buy Yahoo,
it's kind of a shame.
So there you go.
and everybody will know about it, and everybody that we don't want to know about it will know about it as well, because they'll have access to all that information.
Right. One other thing, by the way, even though Verizon has the exclusive, you can still buy it for Google Fi.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Unlock.
Yeah, it's only exclusive in the sense that they're the only carrier selling it in their store at this time.
Right.
You can buy it straight from Google, and it'll work with all other providers. So there isn't like, you can't get a phone that's not going to work with AT&T or T-Mobile. So it's really, again, it's store traffic and it's marketing, advertising. You're not going to see AT&T Pixel commercial for a while.
Okay, now before we get on to some of the details, which I don't know, to be honest, I want to do not a thumbs up, thumbs down, but are you going to buy or not? John is a diehard iPhone person, so I'm going to say he's a no. John, you were thinking about it, actually.
I had thought about it. If I were looking to get an Android device, this would certainly be the one I would get, because I don't really want to go for a Galaxy Note right now.
John lives
in... And I'm actually very curious if that's actually going to play into Google's hand here, where unfortunately people are going to say, I want a premium Android device. Yeah. Samsung. I don't know if I'm quite ready for the heat on that.
Well, that's because
one.
You live in one of the warmer states in the continental U.S.
It's already hot here, so we don't need any more.
Yeah, Don and Frank live in the colder states, so they might need a hand warmer, or fire starter or something.
The whole pricing thing about the smartphones is really, this isn't really a Google issue, as you alluded to. Apple's, first of all the carriers got rid of subsidies. Mm-hmm. So all the price, you can get a loan, if you will, a monthly payment for a phone. But other than that, you're seeing full price on all the carrier advertising in iPhone and obviously Samsung. So we've kind of, there's been a change. Now, obviously there are people that have been willing to put down the money for the Samsung Note 7s and obviously the iPhones, paying that, near $700 price.
Yeah, over,
so
actually. Yeah.
In that regard, I'm not sure if the price is going to be that much of an obstacle. My issue with the price, what really kind of bothers me, is the fact that what this really does is put a premium on the idea of getting updates from the Android software.
Agree.
Yeah.
That's the biggest issue to me. It's if you kind of alluded to it with the fragmentation, it's not so much the feature differences. I could live with that, but the operating system consistency, the versioning, the main pieces, if they do something about that with all the other manufacturer products from OnePlus or Motorola or so forth, then maybe it's okay. But my fear is that, really what you're saying is if you want to get a phone and be confident like you used to be with the Nexus that you're going to get the latest and greatest updates on time, now you got to be willing to spend $700 to do it. And
it's worse than that, because The Verge already said that Verizon is going to control the system update flow, not the 6. So
but
you're not even going to get
what
that.
What I would do is buy the phone directly from Google, right? In that case, now Verizon's out of that picture, right? So I should be getting my updates just like any other Nexus phone.
Right.
But I bought the 6P for $500-some.
Yeah, me
now too. To do the same thing, I got to fork over $700 just for the luxury of getting those updates quickly. That seems wrong.
I can tell you, I know, and they've been pretty public about it. Google is trying very hard. Those monthly security updates they're making available for every OEM and every carrier. We're back in the same boat we were with Windows Mobile years ago, they're making it available, and it comes down to whether or not they're getting pushed out in reality. And I agree. This is the frustration, is that we never saw this before, where Microsoft didn't say, okay, here's a device from us back in those Windows Mobile days. If you can't stomach the OEMs and the carriers not pushing the updates, here's one from us, and we guarantee you'll get those updates. But you're going to have to pay a premium. We probably would have been griping back then too. We're now seeing this. There's a definite division here, and I get concerned that whether or not it's intended, or maybe it is intended, it's almost like holding you hostage. It's mm-hmm. If you want a secure device, you have to pay this price, and that leaves a really bad taste in my mouth. As a consumer, if I've got to pay a premium just to get the security updates, and you can't get, something's wrong with the system if you can't get the other guys, if you truly say you're getting these to them. Like I said, it's the same thing I went through. We all went through with Windows
Mobile. So here's a question. Who are we sort of thinking is the Android target consumer anymore? Because if it's the consumer that's very concerned about security, then I don't think any of us would recommend go Google. I think with Apple being very public about, pushing the bug bounty and everything else now that they're doing. So kind of a question for Don and Frank. If a friend came to you and said, I don't know if I should choose between an iPhone or an Android, what would you look for to make that recommendation?
Before we go there, can I tell you, this is once again, it's Apple's really good at being public about what they're doing. I will tell you, Google's doing a lot of the same. They're just not. They're not as good at marketing this.
Yep.
They are. I mean, they're doing a lot too. But you're right. Here it comes. If somebody was really concerned about security and wanted the guarantee that what they're getting in the device is going to be secure, well, now we're down to you either got to pay a premium for a Pixel, or I'm going to point you to Apple's ecosystem. That's what it comes down to at this point. You can't guarantee that anybody else. I can't guarantee that Samsung's going to do it. Hell, I can't guarantee that Samsung isn't going to spontaneously combust at this point. Never mind. Give you a security update.
And that's an interesting subplot.
Getting it to anyone else's hands.
Well, exactly. That's an interesting subplot that happened here, though, that I'm sure Google didn't even expect when they made plans for Pixel, right? Because if there is really a serious backlash against Samsung, and, it's bad enough they had the initial problems, but I'm hearing even the replacement ones some people are reporting issues with. If they really get tarnished, then the Pixel all of a sudden becomes the only premium Android phone to go against iPhone. And that's interesting. So then their target then is people who want a premium Android phone. Today, that's only been served by Samsung. If Samsung stays in the game, there's two on Android and one with iPhone.
And the other thing too, let's be fair, is the shame in all of this. Before Samsung's reputation got somewhat tarnished and went up in flames. Ooh, bad choice of words too soon. before Samsung had their problems, Samsung was the only other company because of a heavy commitment to the enterprise mainly. That they were very, very reliable on security updates as well.
Yeah.
But now, as we said, we've suddenly got a PR nightmare. And yeah, it turns out you may have one vendor in Android where the big promise in Android always was choice. Now all of a sudden you feel like you got no choice, and it is down to Android with Google's own device or Apple with their own device.
So Todd and I had a bit of a we talked a little bit about Samsung last week because we hadn't talked about them very much. And if I remember right in that conversation, I was saying this could be a problem for Samsung. Todd, you had said that you didn't think it was as big a deal.
I'm curious if you changed or kind of getting down in Frank's opinion. Yeah, I don't think it's a big deal for Samsung, the giant multinational corporate entity. You know, it's like it's a rounding error in terms of their revenue stream. I think it's a giant problem for Samsung as a mobile device maker. So
yeah, especially the second iteration. I mean, that's it. You know, people are willing to forgive the initial release and the problems, and they were quick to respond.
Right.
But if they continue to have problems and that and it continues to persist, then the brand is really tarnished in. You know, people just hear, you know, you go into a store, oh, that Samsung, that's the phone that blows up. Even 2 years from now, people are going to avoid it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just me, but I can't help but feel as though the initial iterations problems were a rush to market to beat the iPhone 7. And the second iterations problems may have been a rush to market to fix the first phone's problems. Yeah. And they're back in the same boat. I can't help but feel this was all about rushing things. And it seems like, and let's be honest, Apple went through this previously themselves to a certain extent. Not obviously things exploding, but they went through some QC problems where they were really rushing at certain times.
And there was AntennaGate too.
Yeah. And
glass
so
back
but
and, yeah.
Yeah, I think one thing this, you know, hopefully, and the cellular, you know, and the mobile device market doesn't seem to have a great reputation from learning from others' mistakes. They tend to like to copy them like it's a blueprint. Hopefully the lesson learned from this is that, two lessons actually. Number one is that every time you rush to market for whatever reason, you're going to pay some price. That seems to be the rule,
yeah.
You know, nowadays. And lesson number two is maybe we need to have a little bit more governance over battery technology than we have had. You know, that's the thing when you think about it, standards for lithium ion. You know, it's basically we've left it to the manufacturing sector, you know, without setting certain.
And you know, you guys in the continental U.S. or the lower 48, as we used to say when I lived in Alaska, don't have the problem we have in Hawaii, is that we can't buy replacement batteries through Amazon anymore. They won't ship it to us. So it's, you know, so like cordless phones in your home, that kind of thing, we can't get them.
Is there a law about that, or what's it? Companies?
I don't know what the cause is, but Amazon about earlier this year simply stopped.
Hey, John and Frank, did we didn't tell Todd that they just don't like Hawaii? Oh,
well,
I'm sorry. Was I supposed?
That's a known problem. You know, our Amazon Prime, which takes you guys 2 days, it takes us maybe a week, sometimes two.
I mean, I'm still trying to figure out when Todd was in Alaska, they referred to it as the lower 48, not the lower 49, because, I mean, were you there that long ago in that magical window where there
that
were
that
one-month only
window before Hawaii became a state?
Yeah, exactly.
No, because they refer to the continental U.S.
Still, lower 49 would be more accurate.
There you go.
You know, I think another interesting question that I have from this hardware, this phone announcement from Google, has to do with HTC. You know, it mentioned the other Android manufacturers. HTC is one of them.
Sure.
This is a bit of a return to HTC's roots of being a behind-the-scenes manufacturer of devices. And this is a company that's had some struggles in the last couple of years, laying off lots of people. So I'm wondering if this is going to be their, you know, kind of how they survive by going back to their roots, and they won't be actively selling phones as under their own brand.
Well,
what do you think?
It kind of sounded like they basically said, you know what, we stole some parts that HTC wasn't using anymore, and now we're going to make our phone out of it. And I think you're right. I think if HTC wants to slide back into the ODM market from being an OEM, that might be a good thing for HTC to at least get a little stronger. I think they kind of came out too strong.
Given their current situation, it's probably the best thing for them. And, you know, companies like Foxconn have done just fine by being completely invisible to the buying public.
Yep.
I was just talking to somebody who really hadn't been around the mobile device space for a very long time. And I was talking to them about, you know, 11, 12, 13 years ago when quietly behind the scenes, HTC was a giant, you know, and it was because they were behind the scenes. And I can remember owning three different or working with three differently branded phones that were all the same base device, all manufactured by HTC. I'd love to see them flourish. And the reason why is I do think when they focus on what they do best, they do a very good job of it.
Yeah.
I like the HTC One device. They can do really nice hardware design, really solid.
Their Windows Mobile stuff, which was branded by other people, were wonderful. The designs were great. They're functional. You know, no complaints at all. In fact, I used to search for if HTC was behind a certain model before I bought it sometimes.
We were just joking about, again, and it made the news that the HD2 from them is running, that somebody got Android 7. They got Nougat working on it. And, you know, and somebody pointed out, they had a picture the other day of the T-Mobile was branded as the Dash 2. And Maya immediately remembered the initial Dash, the HTC Excalibur, which was the most unbelievably durable device in terms of not only being physically durable, but it was used as a test device by Microsoft for how many versions of Windows Mobile OS.
Was that the non-touchscreen keyboard only?
That one, right?
It looked like a BlackBerry.
That was the only Windows Mobile phone I ever cracked a screen on was the Dash. I don't know what I hulked out and was able to do that with a durable phone. But I do like, Todd, that you are now basically saying that HTC's new tagline should be, HTC, we're like Foxconn with less suicides.
That's right. Although, you know, not to go too far off base, but I did, Foxconn is so huge. When that horrible story came out, I said, how true is that? And you know what I found out was, although it is not a laughing matter, obviously, or a light topic, but although what I did is I ran the numbers, and you know, Foxconn is huge. They have literally hundreds of thousands of employees, so you can actually do a per capita comparison in terms of, you know, per 100,000. Their suicide rate was actually lower than the general public in the U.S. I mean, even though it's still a horrible story, and you know, I'm not saying it's not due to Foxconn, but the numbers say that they're per capita.
Was that due to this election year, Todd?
No, but you know, I have been checking with friends in Canada. But anyway, let's not get political.
But Todd, getting to your question of whether or not I'm happy with my 6P, so I'm not running out to buy a Pixel.
Yeah,
but I am keeping my eyeball on. You know, I'm really curious to see where Google takes the Assistant. And how the Assistant plays out, if it improves, and if that's a feature, if that becomes something that still continues to only be available in the Pixel, and it becomes compelling enough, it may be the thing that makes me pull my credit card to buy a Pixel.
But to me, this is more fragmentation for the Android platform. If it's only available in a Pixel, you know, it's bad enough. It's only available in Nougat, right? Because what's the last one? Marshmallow,
yeah.
Doesn't even have 1% yet, I think.
Right. Well, but see, here's the thing and reason why I think this announcement might have been a big deal, and there's some rumors about it. First of all, Assistant is not just in Pixel, it's in Google Home, which we'll probably talk about shortly. Yep. It's in Allo, which is their messaging app. Here's the theory. I wonder if what the Assistant might become is a replacement for Google.com. In other words, 5, 6, 10 years down the road, the idea of opening up a web page and typing in something into a little input box to get information or get something done becomes very antiquated. And the whole how we think of Google, what we do of Google, is what it was announced on Tuesday as the Google Assistant. I think you could take them very literal. They've used the Star Trek metaphor often in the last couple of years. And I think that is actually their strategy. Google Home is the assistant in the enterprise. You know, you say computer or you say, OK, Google, and you interact with it. Without pushing a button, And the Pixel is your little communicator. It can get a badge size to that. And there you are. I think that's really what this is all about, well, more than anything.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think the only question in that, Frank, is in order to accomplish that, does Google decide that you have to buy into their hardware ecosystem entirely? And if so, that is a drastic change philosophically for what they've always done. And how much now all of a sudden you are literally creating two camps, at least at this moment,
right.
You're creating two distinct camps. Where they've seemed to have done fairly well was to make sure those capabilities were made available, even if a little bit limited. They've made those available in other platforms. If they decide to go completely, you got to buy our hardware in order to get our features, then they become the second walled garden. And the question is, are they going to be compelling enough to draw people from iOS, Apple, you know, platforms?
But the operating system concept goes away. It's all replaced by AI. It's again, even Google.com, there's only one instance of it, right? And it is what the company is. It's the crown jewel. So if you're talking about replacing your very existence, if Assistant is the replacement for Google.com, then you're going to want it only in your product. It is why you even exist. You know, and this is just, you know, my theory. I don't know, but the AI is the buzzword in the talk. And right. And if it plays out the way they describe it, I think the operating system, the platform, fades into the background, and it's all about your interaction and how, in a natural language way, okay, and how it responds and the information it gives.
Okay, so I'm going to say one thing, and I'm going to move over to Google Home since Frank brought it up, and that I just did a quick check, and as of mid-2015, Google says that more than half of its searches are done using mobile devices. So for the past year and some odd months now, you know, mobile has been it. And, of course, they've been struggling to figure out how to keep that ad revenue flow going because, you know, you don't really see ads when you use Google Now or, you know, when you use a Google search, typically, at least on a mobile phone. Or at least I don't notice it if I'm seeing it.
No. And I agree. It's a possible strategy. But like I said, it's a very drastic strategy for them. It's a strategic change that it is to some extent is a roll of the dice because they really are. They would be moving away from, including they would be, when you think about it, what they'd be doing from all of their partners, you know, not just phones, you know, with Android and tablets. You'd be talking about all the, you know, again, would there only be Pixel Chromebooks with that functionality? It's a very possible strategy. I agree with Frank. This could be the way they're going. Right. This is the way they could be going.
Yeah.
But in doing so, wow, that's a gamble. And it's a huge gamble. And I'm not saying it isn't. I am not an iPhone, you know, an iOS backer per se. But I am saying that would be a huge strategic gamble for them to take. One they could possibly win. But boy, that'd be a big risk.
It's a paradigm shift. And it's something where if you looked at a Microsoft and you say and you look at companies like that didn't like change fast enough and got locked into what you were and stuck into how you always did things or in what you were all about. If you're sitting there saying, I don't want to repeat that mistake, you got to be willing to try that paradigm.
But Frank, Microsoft's paradigm shift was exactly the opposite of what we're talking about here. Instead of going walled garden, they're going, I'm sticking all my stuff. I'm getting away from boxing in and I'm making it available wherever possible. Again, it's a possible. I'd love to see how this plays out, but from a business perspective, not what I'd like to see technologically, from a business perspective, this is
okay.
And there is one big hole to this, and that Todd touched on it, which is the ad revenue. How do you make money off of this strategy? Which is where, again, with home, segueing to home, Todd, you know, again, if it's all the natural language, how does that play into how they monetize?
And let's face it, you know, with all the stuff Google is known for, I mean, Google's thought of like Bell Labs that was, you know, 30 years ago, right, where all the innovation comes from. But really, they only have one way to make money. 95% of their revenue comes from ads. Nothing else makes money for them, at least significant numbers of, you know, dollars or whatever, and they probably hide their money offshore like everybody else. But anyway, moving on to Google Home, let me say a few things about this one. So Google Home is basically the Echo, or at least Google's version of Amazon's Echo. It's $129. They're touting it as cheaper than the Amazon Echo, which I think now is $169. But hey, you know, you can get the Echo Dot for $50, so you can buy two and have some change left over instead of buying one Google Home. The Echo has a huge ecosystem behind it now of skills, or, you know, what most people would consider apps. Honestly, I love my Amazon Echo. I bought an Echo Dot for my daughter to take back to her college dorm with her, and she loves that thing too. Also Amazon has the advantage of being able to sell stuff easily. Google doesn't really know how to sell stuff directly. You know, they've had that problem for a long time.
Well, and this is great, because again, I think to the point of it, the Google Assistant being in this, I like the idea. If it doesn't really mean to you to get the full advantage of Google Home, it doesn't need to know everything that I'm doing all the time. In other words, if I don't have to buy a Pixel phone in order to get the ultimate benefit from Google Home, I think it's interesting, because I do agree. Of all the assistants, and we can call them whatever we want right now, Google Assistant, they had touted it to be a rebranding, but obviously we're seeing there it's not, because it's not everything. It's not backward compatible. It's not cross compatible yet. But the one thing I will say is Google services, for the OK Google service, works for me in a lot of ways better than Siri has ever worked for me, or even Cortana on the Windows platform. It's the one that I found to be the deepest. If I knew that I would get that kind of functionality and it wouldn't be crippled in any way because I don't have all of their Google Assistant devices, then I'd be okay with it. But now I'm sort of, you know, I look at it $129, and again, I'm sort of saying, what am I going to end up getting in the long run out of this? I don't know yet. This is one of these that I could see possibly as an acquisition, but I'm waiting to hear what others. I'll let others take the first dive.
Let me ask this of you, Don. Do you already have an Amazon Echo?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't. But and I've actually looked there as well.
Yeah, because I was going to say, you know, if I did not have an Echo, I would probably consider buying this, because it does actually have a few advantages. Yeah. And that is it has access to all of my Google Music, to which I am a subscriber.
Well, it also knows it should know everything from your preferences based upon your history with Google services on your phone as an Android user.
And basically, Google knows more about me than NSA. So, I mean, you know.
Well, and the biggest difference between Google Home and Echo is that behind Echo is Bing, and behind Google Home will be Google Search. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from a searching standpoint, right, Google Search is recognized as the leader there. So that should be an advantage. It's going to, again, will come down to what's really different also is that context, that dialogue they showed of you interacting with it. You know, Alexa is much more command and control type of thing, right? You have to be very explicit about what you say, and there is no recognized content or context, I should say, in your query. So that's where I think, you know, if Assistant becomes able to be very natural language and can handle asking things in multiples of different ways, so it's like you're talking to a person, then it's gonna probably win out, particularly if the price becomes at least the same as
I understand what you're saying about context. I think I saw heard the demo where they basically asked, you know, something about dinner, and they said, how far is it? And you don't even say where you are, and it kind of knows where you are and gives you the distance and your time for travel. But, you know, I will say that the Amazon Echo does do, like, not that kind of deep context or rich context, but in its own way, the skills at least can be programmed to do really simple things like, did you really mean this or that, or would you like me to continue? So it has some, you know, some very primitive context that it's working on, and I can see how its engineers could easily add that, because, you know, all the intelligence is out there in the cloud. So it's not something like we would have to update the Echo itself. And I have to say the reason why I really like the Echo, you know, after trying Cortana and OK Google on my phone and Siri, is that it's not that it's any smarter. It's that that darn microphone array on the Echo is freaking incredible.
That's the one thing I'll be curious about again. That's why I'm sort of waiting to see what some of the initial feedback on Home is, because I have heard too is the recognition because of the hardware, never mind the software, yeah. But that whole thing is supposed to be very good.
And also, it recognizes its own sound, so it can be blasting music or a podcast or something. But if you say something, it says, "Oh, I hear something," you know, that I'm not producing. And sort of, reduces its own volume and then tries to figure out what you just said.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. Like I said, I'm very curious, A, to see how the hardware and the technology in that regard works. And again, my ultimate hope is that Google's hope isn't that you buy one of these and then really, it's one of these as well. To really take advantage, you have to go and buy this hardware and this hardware. I really don't feel like going down that path.
I think like you, this is the most interesting of the products they announced there, but it's just too expensive given that I already have an Amazon Echo that I like very much. If they had
you don't want a 3-pack of Wi-Fi for mesh?
Yeah, I saw that. We'll come to that one. But if they if this was out there for $79.95 or $89.95, I'd have bought it. But at $129,
gotta wait and see.
I can pass. Yeah. How about you, Frank? You gonna buy one?
I'm probably gonna end up buying one. Yes, okay, I have an Echo and I use it. And I guess I've become slowly, invested in the Internet of Things. I have Hue lights. I have a smart thing hub. So I've been playing around with this stuff, so I have a lot more curiosity and interest in dabbling around with it. I do think one of the problems, when you talk about this in the Wi-Fi routers, the one area that's problematic with the Internet of Things is the requirement for so many different hubs. Mm. I have 3 hubs in my house right now. I have the Hue hub for the Hue lights. I have the SmartThing hub, and I have a Logitech Harmony hub to control the TV and that. It's crazy. When in the old networking days, right, we had standardization, so you could plug in any network interface card and connect it to any switch, and it would all work together, and it succeeded, right? The market would have never worked in networking if that didn't happen. Well, the Internet of Things market is extremely siloed right now, and even if the protocols are there, but you still got to have the bridges to do all the communication. So I'd have much rather have seen Google tackle that type of bridging versus the Wi-Fi router thing that they basically announced.
And because
we should remember that we got to that standard of networking, but not before going through a lot of proprietary hell, for lack of a better term. And we go through.
We're speaking,
all
of course,
time,
of
and
token.
I think you're right. I think you're right because I think we're going through this iteration with IoT. We're going through proprietary until somebody comes up with standards to eliminate everybody making their own little siloed technology.
Yeah. And Don, by hell, I assume you're alluding to a token ring.
I wasn't going to name it by name,
But yes.
But you're right. No, I think we go through this with everything. And you're right, Frank. It's right now. The pain point is everybody making their own siloed little standards. In this case, it's not so much a software standard, it's or a networking standard. It's a little hardware standard. Right.
The advantage I have over Frank is being both poor and a cheapskate. I didn't do any of this IoT thing until I got my Echo and got interested in actually doing something. So my strategy.
I still have a clapper.
Apparently. My, not being the cheapskate, my savior is that I still don't feel very comfortable talking to a machine. So I have nothing in my house other than Siri on my phone and on my Mac, and I don't really like talking to her.
Okay, this is
you don't like talking to humans. You don't like talking to humans either, John. So let's be honest.
And of course,
your pets are good. But
the giant irony is, of course, John is a psychologist. So.
But that's an interesting point though, because I think a lot of people have been wondering why did Because Echo is a surprise hit, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And why in the heck did it come from Amazon? And, you know, clearly Google, or Apple for that matter, could have done an Echo device before Amazon. Yeah. And I think one of the things that might have impeded that is the weird fitness factor that John's just referring to. I think that certainly Google is probably more conscious of it, but I think Apple to a certain point that people wouldn't be comfortable about a device always listening to them, right? Amazon, I think, basically was throwing some spaghetti on the wall with this and see if it stuck. And lo and behold, people have been willing to buy it. So Echo's success in this always listening thing has given Google the opportunity to do the Google Home that they probably wouldn't have done otherwise. I'd be shocked if they would had the guts to do it on their own.
I have
the first
a different
time.
Theory, but go ahead, yeah. Don.
I was going to turn to Dr. Westfall on this and say, I believe to a certain extent, that, and I think it leads along the line of what you were saying, Frank, I think there was a certain psychology about it. If Google gives you a device you have to talk to, people look at Google being the technology company. If Apple gives you some technology company, Amazon wasn't really a technology company. So it was more like an appliance rather than some piece of hardware from some technology company. I think people might have just felt less inhibited or less afraid, for lack of a better term, by that. And I think that's now, on the other hand, it opened up the doors for everybody else to jump in. So, but I think if they had jumped in first, it wouldn't have worked.
So here's my theory about why Amazon's Echo succeeded where others failed, now, even though they came earlier. All the other use cases made no sense. And I know Frank and I have a big disagreement on this, on speech technology. Frank's been a huge fan of speech for years and years. We've had podcasts about it going back years on this. And my contention is that speech technology makes almost no sense in many of the places where Google and in the way of Android phones, where Google and Apple and even Microsoft with their desktops have been most successful, and that's in the office. It is idiotic. Unless you have your own office, you know, a walled office with a door, it is idiotic to be speaking to your device all day long. You are annoying other people. They are annoying you. So it just doesn't make sense to be speaking to your, you know, asking your, I was just thinking the other day, it's a good thing I don't have a coworker named Alexa in the office, because I all day long, Alexa, what time is it? Oh, no, Alexa's going to, I should shut down my Echo when I do this. But anyway, you know, I would say, what time is it? What's the weather like? You know, and this person would be extremely annoyed at me. But the Amazon Echo, on the other hand, is in your home, in the literally the privacy of your home. And it's normal to just kind of be, you know, talking.
Yeah, I like I said, that may be part of it. I just think it didn't come from a company where you naturally expected our robotic overlords to try to make us speak to equipment. I mean, we look at it coming from Amazon, and it was like, okay, and they did a great job of positioning and marketing it as something very natural rather than this is the next big thing, this is futuristic. It almost was like, okay, this thing's going to drop on your, you know, on a table in your kitchen, and you're going to start talking to it. And maybe that's where, like I said, there was a certain comfort level. I think now that we've seen it work, I think people are more open to it in general. You're right. They're still just like speaking into a Bluetooth headset, walking down the street, people look at you a little bit strange still, and therefore you have a little bit of discomfort in it. I still think you're right. In other places other than the home, it may be a little bit uncomfortable and unnatural, and there's going to still be that reluctance to it.
Well, and let's think about it from a speed perspective. If I am at my device, there's nothing I can really think of that takes less time if I know my device by saying it to my device and trying to go through the AI than if I were just open up the app and do it. You know, even setting timers and things like that, it's just only marginally quicker to ask for it than to just open and do it.
Oh, I disagree with you there completely. There are many times where, you know, I'm doing something outdoors, and I go, oh, I just thought of something. I need to do something in 10 minutes. I need to, you know, have a and I will just yell at my Echo and just say, hey, you know, set the timer for this, and boom.
Notice how I said if you're using your device.
Well,
if you are away from your device, then yeah, I can see the AI. This is why I would think that the Echo can and the Home can do things and go into a market that just having something on your phone can't. Yeah. If I'm holding my phone, I'm not going to start talking to it when I already have it open, unlocked, whatever. And up until recently, you had to hold down a button or you had to, activate voice command. But yeah, you're right. If your phone is in your pocket and you just think of something, voice is going to be a lot quicker. But that wasn't how we got into AI
but for stuff with Siri. Certain things, specifically setting a timer, checking news, checking weather. It is far faster to check on my Echo than it is on my phone. You know, I have to, even though I have a very fast fingerprint unlock now, and iOS 10 and the 7 Plus is lightning fast to unlock. It's almost like, did I even lock the phone? Did I set this up right? Even that, you know, just, I have to press the phone, I have to find the app, I have to launch it, I have to do something. With the Echo, I just say it and it's done.
Well, the big difference with Echo and Google Home, though, with voice, is that for those two, voice is the only input method.
Yep.
Where on the phone with Siri, you still had to, you've got, it's only one of many ways to do input. And that's the big difference. I mean, you know, Todd, I never would suggest back when we used voice command days on the pocket PCs and that should be the only way you can do things with the device. It's one of many.
It was an adjunct.
And there are then certain use cases where it works.
Yeah.
The Echo in Google Home now, it's only going to be voice. So obviously it's an evolution of the technology to do voice recognition.
And I'll say this, you know, although everybody always says that the Echo is voice only, actually the Alexa app, for iOS and Android, or even the webpage, echo.amazon.com, lets you control it. You can play music, you know, from your keyboard, from your device. So you actually do have an input other than voice. It's just that most people never need it, which is kind of amazing.
In fact, I have a remote control for my Echo that I've never used.
Yeah, exactly.
I could carry this around. I could talk into it if I wanted to.
But why, right? You don't need
it. I don't have the use for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and let's also think about different use scenarios with smartphones. You know, Todd, you're talking about it's faster for you checking the weather and news to go to just to ask Alexa. For me, it's take phone, swipe right, and I actually swiped the other way. I swiped wrong when I was doing it on video just now. But swipe over and just use the Today view in iOS.
Yeah.
And that took a lot of training for me to think to do that. So it's always what you are used to doing is how quickly you're going to either explore things where you go, my current system is really not working well, or you're going to be resistant to it. So that I guess that's why I'm just not talking to anyone lately, AI, or I guess people.
One of the things I do every morning when I wake up is I say, Alexa, is it going to rain today? Oh, Alexa's not talking to me.
Yeah, you see, Alexa is tired of answering your question. She told you this morning if it was going to rain today.
Alexa, is it going to rain today?
No.
Okay, so, you know, it's just very simple and fast, except for that one glitch is very unusual. But in
now,
any case.
Now, the one thing that will blow up this whole thing is if you find out that the NSA or the FBI or that subpoenaed Amazon or Google to get somebody's voice recording off of one of these devices. I mean, the creepy factor of something, you know, constantly listening in your home is still there.
Yes.
And as soon as somebody finds out that, you know, it's really being constantly recorded and stored at one of these companies, this whole game is off.
And just the other thing is an overarching to this artificial intelligence is, since it's not all local in nature, no matter which one we're using, there is an awful lot. You have to accept how much privacy you're giving up in terms of your information.
Yep.
For Google Assistant or for Siri or for Cortana to truly work, they need to know it's artificial intelligence. They're supposed to be your assistant. They have to know you. And so you have to be willing to accept the fact that until the day comes where there's true artificial intelligence locally located within this being, this device,
and
it's not relying on the cloud, there's that part. And obviously, people are willing with Alexa at this point to, you know, and the Echo to give up a lot to Amazon in that regard.
Right. And, you know, for Android users who have not turned off their location services, and I can't imagine why most people would, go do this. Go to your web browser and go check for your Amazon location history. You will find it. I'm sorry, your Google location. You will find Google knows every place you've been if you carried your phone.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, they're pretty obvious in it in certain regards if you do things like using Google Fit.
Yep.
I mean, very obvious in knowing where you, not only what you did, but where you did it as well.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, it's something that I think I find interesting for all our concerns over security and our privacy of data. We tend to be very open and willing to use artificial intelligence services like the Echo with Alexa.
Yeah.
Now we're looking at Google Home. We're okay, Google. This information is stored someplace, and it's sometimes the it's the most personal of information because it may not necessarily be a password, but it's showing your tendencies, your interests.
Oh yeah,
your where you're searching for, you know, what kind of knowledge you're looking to acquire.
Yeah,
it's fascinating. But it's scary at the same time.
Google knows what days I'm most likely to go to Costco, because certain days it will. Most days it just shows me the traffic to my home, and some days it shows me the traffic to Costco and my home, just in case.
Yeah. That's creepy, isn't it?
but touching on something Todd said earlier, the difference between the two has to do with Amazon and buying things from Amazon. And I'd be really curious to know, I don't know if there's any data out there, I almost doubt it is, of how many people actually do buy things using the Echo. Because that could be, if a lot of people actually buy things using the Echo, that could actually be a very big factor in which one of these devices buy for yourself.
I just like this idea that maybe someone one day is walking around their house going, I really wish I had some beef jerky right now. And 2 days later, beef jerky just shows up.
No, not 2 days later. An hour later, a drone shows up.
Yeah, that's true.
But there's a lot of cases, you know, where you put the Echo in the kitchen, right? And somebody's sitting there and you open up the fridge and you don't see milk. You just say, Alexa, order me some milk. And it's in your cart, and like Todd suggested, if you're in certain markets, you could get it delivered later that day.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the scenario they paint that it's actually capable of being done today.
And there is an Amazon Now service in, I think, parts of San Francisco, Portland, and Seattle, where you can get 1 or 2 hour delivery. So it's it's doable.
It's a possibility,
Okay, moving on. Oh, I didn't ask John if he was going to buy a Google Home, since he doesn't
have I'm still trying to figure out how to talk to a machine and not feel silly doing it. So
I know how to do this. Go to Grant and go study the heck out of it, and then you'll figure it out.
You're right. That would actually make a lot of sense. But what I should be able to do is say, hey, AI of some sort, write a grant proposal.
There you go.
Get me funding so I can study you more. As soon as they do that, then I will be right on it.
Yeah, and also next, after that, invent a perpetual motion machine and we're done. Next thing is, I have mixed... Well, first of all, it's of absolutely no use to me since I'm not going to buy a Pixel. And that's Google's Daydream View virtual reality headset. It only works with the Pixel at the moment. It's $79, but I believe if you buy a Pixel, it comes with it. So really, it's a wash. You'll get one with your Pixel. I love the idea of VR and AR and all the Rs, all the realities. Even reality is okay with me. But I don't know. Because it's limited to the Pixel, it's of no value to almost anybody.
Yeah.
But it is going to be available to non-Pixel devices. I think they've already said that.
Yes, they have said that. But when? Right? I mean, Marshmallow is still not available on most phones. So if you need Nougat and, you know, whatever special doohickey they put into Pixel... I don't know when it's going to be available.
5 short years, Todd. 5 short years.
Well, to me, my take on it was that it's not that it's a step up from the Google Cardboard. And Cardboard's been working for a while now. So I don't know. I don't feel like this is a real big area. It almost feels like a throw-in thing. Like you said, they're throwing it in if you pre-order right now. And it almost feels like, I mean, they've been dabbling with Cardboard for a while. So I guess they're kind of keeping their their toes in that area just to see if something's there.
You know,
and that's
more
it.
More, Google makes things that I don't see the average consumer really caring to buy from Google or really caring to think of Google as a brand leader in. VR headsets, Wi-Fi routers.
Mm-hmm. Which you're going to talk about next.
Yeah, I just it doesn't seem like I've heard people say to me, "Oh, I use Android. I really wish Google made a phone or something like that," which now they are. But I've never heard someone say, "You know who I really wish would make a Wi-Fi router? Google, because those guys understand Wi-Fi routers."
Well, you know,
and they've been making these Wi-Fi routers for how many years now?
Yeah,
like two, three years, and I still have not heard a single person say, you know, the Google Wi-Fi router, that's the one you want to get.
You know, it's not available anymore because apparently Google took down all the Google Cardboard options when they announced the VR headset. But ironically, a nice-ish plastic Google Cardboard holder was available for about $15, which I bought, which is half the price of an actual cardboard made device, which is like $30 or $25. So, you know, it's
But cardboard was all about getting people to try out virtual reality.
Right, right.
It, you know, I mean it wasn't it's not fancy and it's you know, I mean the New
it's
York
the
Times and
fancy.
Some of the publications gave it away.
Yeah.
So it spread that opportunity to try the technology out, which is kind of interesting because it makes you wonder, did Google really think that virtual reality as a technology is something that is you know, in the horizon? And I think the jury's still out on that. So it's I don't know where that's going to go.
Well, I think after Facebook bought Oculus, you know, they just went full tilt and, you know.
The thing I find interesting about this, again, is you're right. They I can't imagine that they tried out with cardboard and said, "Wow, we moved so many of these cheap cardboard devices that we'll now have a device that only works with Pixel, and this will be the compelling reason to buy a Pixel."
Right. And it's the opposite
I can't
of
see
cardboard.
That being the case.
You know,
I've got to believe that their VR headset, if they're really going to be promoting VR with the platform, I got to believe sooner rather than later that, and by sooner, I mean, I can't see them going much more than a couple of months before they start making this generally available. If they drag this out as a Pixel exclusive for a year.
Yeah, because right now
they basically killed the idea. They killed all momentum.
Right now, it's the exact opposite of cardboard, which worked with most, you know, recently made Android phones. Worked with the iPhone. You can even create a Google Cardboard VR type content using an iPhone now. That was recently released. Mm-hmm. With Daydream, you're not just 1%. You're 0.01% because it only works with Pixel for now, at least. And you know,
I'm curious. I would love to know what their true take on VR is, because that might help explain this whole thing a little bit better. But that's the big question mark: is what's the real take on VR right now?
It's the next frontier for ads, right?
That may be very much it. But, you know, interestingly enough, this is also an area that Microsoft's in, right? I mean, so if for nothing than that, the only player not in this game doing something publicly is Apple.
Well,
you got Facebook, you got Microsoft, you got Google all doing something with VR, trying to figure this stuff out.
Microsoft is more AR at this point. They're really, when you look at HoloLens, it's really more about AR. And ironically, the focus is anything but consumer at this point when you really look at it.
And honestly, I find
sure
AR
they're going
more interesting
there.
Than VR.
And I think that's where, I think that's fascinating when you look at VR and its capabilities as well as its limitations. You know, making somebody motion sick really quick is something that happens so much with VR, but AR as well. And Google, this is interesting to come back to Google and look at Google Glass, which while it got, you know, totally lambasted for its look and everything else, the idea of AR with all of Google's knowledge seems to be a much more natural fit for them.
I think so too.
than VR does.
I just think they creeped out too many people with the Google Glass.
It's interesting, you know, with that there that this whole thing with VR exists. But again, I don't know where they see it, and they really haven't been clear on where they see, outside of some high level fluff marketing, where they see themselves in terms of VR at this point. It'll be interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So none of us are going to buy this because none of us are going to get a Pixel. So that's no question there. Okay. Moving on to the last, to Google Wi-Fi, which is, I guess, their follow on to Google. What was that thing called? OnHub?
The OnHub. OnHub.
Did you buy one, Frank?
No.
Okay. So, $129, which is kind of expensive. I mean, you know, most good Wi-Fi access points cost more than $100, sure. But for, you know, an average person, they go, well, I can get a $50, you know, Linksys or something. Why am I going to spend $129? And the answer is, if you have a large home, which I do not, or you have a large-ish area, you can buy a 3-pack for $300 and save yourself $30 a pop. Because it has a mesh networking component that lets you mesh themselves together and then take care of your end device with Google Wi-Fi. So, anybody buying one? I'm not.
Nope.
Well, I don't have the need, but this is interesting because here's an area where you're taking something that's been very commonly used in the enterprise, right? Of multiple access points providing coverage in a piece of real estate, if you will. And so Eero has been a provider of this type of thing already for a while, right? Of being able to, you know, have access points put in a home so you can improve your Wi-Fi coverage and have them work intelligently so it simplifies that process.
Right.
So I think, you know, again, this is not about a single device at $129. This is about buying more than one of those devices.
The 3-pack.
The 3-pack, and improving the coverage. If you're a person that has got a house and you've got dead spots, this is being an attempt at providing you an affordable way to address that issue. Whether that's a big enough problem for a lot of people remains to be seen.
I think the mistake is that they're not targeting this at small business more than homes, because small business that does have the geography and whether it be a restaurant or be in a location that has warehouse space or things like that, there is where I see the real value in this. And the only reason why I point that out is the Wi-Fi extender for home, Wi-Fi extender market combined with technologies like NAC, we're getting to the point where for the average home, if you do have a dead spot, the extenders have become brain dead. Simple. The plug in, it's literally plug and play.
Yeah, and so secure.
I see your Google Wi-Fi, that 3-pack working really well for a lot of small businesses that need more coverage because of their location. Mm. And they're a small business that doesn't want to pay somebody for something overly complicated or sophisticated.
And Don, you just echoed almost exactly what I was thinking about the extender market and just the price points. You have a $50 Linksys. It doesn't reach that one little area in the back of the house or on the second floor or something like that. So you buy another $50 or $100 extender. You're at $150 and you're blanketing your whole house. Unless you live in a stone dungeon or something like that. That's the only time I could really think you're not able to get by with those two things, or you've got a McMansion.
I don't think it's.
And then
I don't think it's a bad idea.
Multiple extenders, but
I don't think it's a bad idea. I think it's. I think at who they seem to be targeting it, it's. They're trying to solve a problem that may not exist. There is a target segment that I think this could be a very good solution for. I just don't think they're targeting them at this point.
Okay, so I take it none of us are buying the Google Wi-Fi.
Nah. Nope.
Don't have a need for it.
Yeah, me too.
If I did, I'd consider it. I think it comes down to need. I do think there's an appeal if it looks good. I think the thing you mentioned about the extenders is they all still look like network gear. And I think for certain people, that's a bit of a turnoff if you're going to try to put multiple things around. So that might be a factor. And it really comes down to the software and how well, how simple it is and how it works.
But, you know, the nice things about the current generation extenders, they're cheap. Most of them are less than 80. I bought one for 50.
Yep.
They're easy to set up, I think.
Yep.
So
I'm still shocked, honestly, talking about Wi-Fi routers. My Wi-Fi is running off an Apple time capsule that's 5.5 years old, and I'm still shocked that thing is still as reliable as ever. Yeah, so these things, that's telling me, because I used to previously before that had Wi-Fi routers probably die out every couple of years. You know, they'd overheat or something like that. Yeah. So if this is an indication, I think the last 5 years, if you bought a router, you probably haven't replaced it.
And that's still my experience, maybe because I live in a very warm, humid climate near the ocean, but I always have a backup router.
And we feel bad for you.
Well,
we feel bad for you every single time you tell us.
You know, I have a Wi-Fi access point in a shrink wrap box, safe from the salt air, all the time. I have one right now just sitting there waiting for one to die. Okay, the last one, the Chromecast Ultra.
But you have no batteries because no one will ship them to
no
you.
No batteries here. No lithium ions. this is a problem, by the way. I mean, you know, I can go to the store and buy it, but it'd be nice to order it from Amazon at a discounted price. But in any case, the last item that Google announced was the Chromecast Ultra. I should note, I have the first generation Chromecast, which I think was, I bought it for $20, you know, at the kind of half price sale they had when they launched it, which is great. I bought one for my mom's home. I bought one for my former office. I took it back with me when I went to a new job, but I haven't connected it at home because I have no need for it at home. And I don't see a need for the Chromecast Ultra because I don't even have a fancy TV. I mean, I have a flat screen, but it's not a 4K or...
Yeah.
I have a 1080p.
I think you summed it up. I think it's a great idea, but it is, at this point, it's serving a very specific market, I think. Yeah. And looking at combining that with they're going to be providing 4K content to stream over the Ultra, I think is great if you've got 4K.
Yeah, because, I really want to see pores.
And I think that, the thing is this, anybody who's going to be buying a new TV in the market now, and certainly at Christmas, is going to be buying a 4K TV.
You think
I have one. It's the one I bought. Yeah, and they're cheap. I just bought one, and I paid around $600 for it. A Samsung 55-inch.
Yeah, 4K. I think this is a good move on their part. They're positioning. This is one thing that they're getting, jumping on early in the wave.
So this is,
and you're right, Frank. You're right, Frank. This is, I see 4K TVs being a hot commodity this Christmas because of the pricing. It's they're becoming de facto almost. It's I have a feeling by post holiday and inventory clearance, I think we're going to see in 2017 4K is just.
I haven't bought a new TV in years, so I have no idea what's out there.
It's just a numbers game in that regard.
Yeah,
they don't require batteries, Todd. So you can actually have a new TV
like
and not worry about.
Like the remote control does.
I'm sorry.
You know, Todd, the more I think about this, I think the reason we have Frank and Donna is they actually buy new things.
I think we buy all kinds of stuff.
I buy phones and smartwatches, and you buy phones, but we don't seem to buy anything else.
No. Well, that's why we have Jack on when we need somebody who's bought a service, or Sven Johansson, Yeah, you're right. That's why we have our friends on, because they buy more stuff than we do.
The other important factor with this particular device has to do with the Google Play, right? The amount of 4K content that you can get, even from Netflix, are really limited right now. And I think Google said that, they have a definite intent to having more 4K content on the Play Store. So this gives an avenue to actually take advantage of that. That's probably going to be a short time opportunity. I'm sure Netflix is going to get more out there. Back to the Wi-Fi routers and all that thing, when you start getting something like 4K, it now becomes, again, more about the transport of getting that amount of content to your devices.
Okay, so speaking of content, before I sign off, I'll say one semi-related thing about Google, since Frank brought up Google Play. So I am a Google Play subscriber. I pay, I just changed my grandfathered $8 a month. I gave that price up so that I could do a family plan with my daughter who's in college, which is $15 a month for the two of us. And the neat thing is that it not only gives her access to the music in Google Play, but also gives her YouTube Red, which is ad-free YouTube video sharing, video viewing, sorry. And Google has a family plan, much like Apple's, where I can buy a movie or TV show and she can see it even though she's, you know, a couple thousand miles away. So that's kind of neat. Although we did run into problems. So I recently, last week with the season premiere of The Flash Season 3, I paid my $40 to Google to you know, get a put it in the family library. And at first, she couldn't see the library, and I had to go through all kinds of, magical incantations to get it to work. And then Google Play didn't get the first episode running, 24 hours after it aired, as their documentation states. And I contacted Google support, and they verified that they're having a problem. It finally became available yesterday, for 3 days after it aired. But at any rate, it works well, except for that problem. She's now able to see anything I subscribe to her. I'm going to subscribe to a few other TV shows. She doesn't have a TV set. So, it lets me watch something rather than just have her buy it on iTunes and watch it on her iPad or whatever. So, same price.
I have to agree. The family plans thing is so... If it isn't being done by a company when it comes to media at this point, it's crazy. It's the most, even for two people, never mind in my case, a family of four, in our case, we're using Spotify just because of the cross platform support, across devices, but it's the same thing. It's crazy if you're not offering it because it becomes such a compelling feature. Yeah. And right now, if you're not offering it, I know a lot of people who are just dismissing right away. Well, because you don't make it an option.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, the reason I went with Google Play instead of the iTunes family plan is because Google Play plays across almost everything. I mean, not the Rokus and things, I think. But it'll work on iOS, it'll work on Android, it'll work on your, Windows or Mac desktop. It's not only music, it includes, like I said, YouTube Red, so you can get ad-free videos. Which kids, I watch YouTube all the time. And the shared library for movies and TV shows I buy.
Yeah.
That's a winner, So you want to go see this? Sure, here, I'll buy it. I want to watch it too. So I bought The Flash. Yeah. I'm going to pick up Supergirl for her, that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, it's great. I'm a big proponent of that. I think that's the best thing they could do right now when it comes to the media services.
Okay. So unless anybody has anything to add, I am going to bring to an end the officially longest Mobile Views podcast we've ever recorded. We are over 1 hour and 17 minutes. For you guys on the East Coast, thanks for staying up late.
Old man talked about old tech.
Yep.
Well, for you guys on the East Coast, thanks for staying up late. I know it's approaching midnight for you now. Thanks for hanging in there with me on the longest podcast ever known to man and woman. I don't want to go there again in the political stuff, but whatever gender you are, or mammal, other mammals other than humans might be listening to. Anyway, thanks as usual to the good Dr. John Westfall for being my co-host, and to Frank McPherson, and to, I was going to say Sven. See, I almost messed up your name again, Don.
Now you've got the whole name messed up, not just the last part.
Don's one hand over there.
Okay, so 1 hour, 18 minutes in, we are done, and John and I will be back to you next week, and we'll figure out who else to get on here and talk about. I don't know what the announcement... Microsoft has an announcement coming up, but I don't think anybody cares.
Yeah, Microsoft hardware announcement.
Yeah, we'll see.
Are they due for a new Xbox?
Is this going to be the shortest Mobile Views following the longest one?
I would really like Microsoft to release... another presenter mouse. Mine died, and I found that if you want to get a new one on eBay, they're going for upwards of $200.
Okay, so
I want another paint program personally. I think there just aren't enough paint programs.
We're still recording, so for prosperity or posterity, I should say. What I'm going to say is what I would really like Microsoft to announce is a Windows Hello compatible mouse with fingerprint reader on it.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Interesting. That'd solve a lot of problems for me because. None of my home Windows devices have Windows Hello compliant camera. None of them have a built-in fingerprint reader or whatever else it needs. So, and I don't want to add just something for fingerprint reading or just a camera just for Windows Hello. I've already got a camera, but I can always replace my mouse. I wouldn't mind replacing my mouse if it has a fingerprint reader I can log in with Windows. Anyway, okay, so now we're at an hour and 19 minutes, and I'm going to say goodbye. Bye.